13. The next morning, Caro itched even worse. Despite the anti-itch med and lime juice, her face and back kept up a constant low-level prickliness that said, "Scratch me." She didn't. The last thing she wanted was to create oozing sores, but it took an enormous effort. The itching made it difficult to concentrate. The pile of folders on her desk looked like a multicolored bog she would never be able to cross without sinking. Counterbalancing her discomfort was a voicemail from Ellen. "Your money arrived in PayPal, and a friend found me a custody lawyer that I'm seeing at noon. The lawyer said on the phone that she thinks I can get Kayla back soon. Damn, but you're good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you." Caro tried to call Ellen, but she didn't pick up. Caro wrote Ellen an email and then sat motionless at her laptop, lost in memory. She and Ellen as children, in the elaborate playroom their mother had filled with toys instead of her maternal presence. Caro and Ellen had never played with most of the toys. They'd preferred their own imaginations. Two children pretending to be a cast of hundreds. Ellen as a princess and Caro as a dragon. Ellen as a shark and Caro as a swimmer. They were cowboys, whose cows were attacked by wolves. Explorers lost in a snake-filled jungle. Knights fighting with makeshift swords until one of them decided to shriek dramatically and fall over. Attacks from dragons, sharks, wolves, snakes, jousters. Children could be so enthusiastically gory. Or had the bloodthirstiness been unique to them? Caro couldn't remember Kayla playing such games. Of course, she seldom saw Kayla with other children. It finally occurred to Caro that she was hungry. In the refectory, Julian sat at a table with two women. He motioned her over. "Caro, there you are. Two people you'll want to meet. Their plane was delayed by weather in Miami, so they've just arrived. Dr. Caroline Soames Watkins, neurosurgeon. Dr. Barbara Muma, neuroradiologist. Dr. Molly Lewis, anesthesiologist. If you will all excuse me, I'm needed in the security office, and I'll leave you three to get acquainted." "Caro, I've already told them about your arboreal battle yesterday." He smiled and left. "Hello," Caro said, wishing she did not look so much like the loser in her arboreal battle. Hard to make a good professional impression with the face she'd just seen in her bathroom mirror.
"Don't try to smile," Molly Lewis said.
In her late 30s or early 40s, she had flamboyant orange curls, a startling Mae West figure, and a forthright grin.
"We'll take it for granted that you're thrilled beyond words to meet us. Do you itch very much?"
"Yes," Caro said.
"You don't look as bad as I did when I tangled with a maiden plum."
Despite her face, Caro smiled. When Julian said that, he was lying.
"Well, I'm not lying. It was horrible."
"And? Julian always lies.
You can't believe a word he says, except about the project."
"Molly," Barbara Muma said with mock reproof. "Don't run down our project heads before Dr. Soames Watkins has time to form her own opinions of them."
"Caro, please," Caro said.
Molly said, "I'm not running down Julian. I'm praising him. Liars are always the most charming men. They have the best imaginations."
Barbara Muma rolled her eyes at Molly, a mock gesture that looked practiced. A tall black woman with close-cropped hair, Barbara projected more reserve than Molly.
A puppy projected more reserve than Molly.
But clearly the two were good friends. Caro recognized Barbara from the recording of Julian's session with the deep image reconstructor. She had been standing by a bank of computer screens. As neuroradiologist, she would be interpreting all brain imaging before, during, and after the programmed chips were implanted, and would work with Caro on the brain mapping article she hoped to publish. Caro said, "I'm told that I can't operate until my itching subsides, and it's clear that I won't develop open sores, so I'm afraid you both could have stayed on vacation a while longer. I'm sorry for the inconvenience."
No problem, Molly said. I was glad to have my visit to my sister cut short. We don't actually like each other, but, well, you know, family. Besides, the rains have started in Seattle and won't stop until June.
You're from Seattle? Caro asked. They talked lightly about their hometowns, superficial information about their families, their med school days, all the while assessing each other. Caro liked them both, but how did you find Chicago in winter chatter couldn't answer Caro's real questions. What had made Barbara Mumaw and Molly Lewis join Watkins's edgy project? How much of Weigert's theory did they believe? Such information would have to come slowly. She would also have liked to know if Molly, exuberant and sexy, was or ever had been involved with Julian. But since she was ashamed of the thought, none of her business, she banished it. Her itching increased. It was Barbara who noticed. She said tactfully, I'm afraid we're taking up too much of your time, Caro. Julian said he dumped a pile of information on you. If you need to go read it, Molly and I can answer any questions you might have. I'm in room 16 and Molly's in 17. We should go too and unpack. Thanks, Caro said. I'm in 5. I should start studying all of Julian's folders, preferably while sitting in a tub of lime juice. Molly said, but you probably don't want to study all day. Maybe later we three can check out a Jeep and drive down to Brack Reef. I'll bet Caro hasn't seen much of the island, unless Julian took her on a tour.
Julian again, Caro said. All I've seen is the drive with Ben Clarby from the airport, and he wasn't very informative.
No, Barbara said. He wouldn't be.
Molly said, I don't trust Ben. He's the only one here that I don't trust.
That was interesting. Or at least it was until Barbara said, You usually trust everybody.
Molly gave a theatrical sigh.
True enough. That's how I end up with the men I get. Caro, would you be averse to a drink if we go to the resort hotel? Do you drink?
Ordinarily, yes. Right now, I'll have cranberry juice. And I'd love to go. Let me postpone my conference with Ralph until tomorrow.
Great.
I can see that it's going to be much better working with you than with David Weeks.
Good surgeon, but nobody really liked him. Bark orders at your colleagues type.
Barbara said, Caro, feel free to bark all the orders you want.
Molly, really?
Caro laughed.
It hurt her face.
I'll bark softly and carry a big bone saw. It was a good beginning.
2 hours later, her optimism seemed unjustified, although not at first. She went over Julian's imaging, pre-op, during surgery, and post-op. David Weeks's notes were meticulous, the imaging thorough. Julian's skull had been opened, something Caro had done dozens of times, and the chip inserted at a precise location. As with deep brain stimulation, thin wire leads connected the chip to a power source. Although unlike DBS, the tiny battery was not under Julian's skin, but external, serving as both brain pacemaker and connector to the external computers. For part of this first-ever chip insertion, Julian had been awake, his head held firmly in a stereotactic frame, able to give verbal feedback on what he experienced. With DBS, the lead wires would work if at least one of the electrodes was in the target motor area. But DBS was crude compared to this insane operation. Still, Dr. Weeks had done a beautiful job, and Julian hadn't experienced any of the things that could go wrong with brain surgery: intracranial hemorrhage, stroke, infection. Post-op MRIs showed only minimal scarring. According to charting done by the head surgical nurse, Imelda Majoub, Julian had recovered quickly, without significant side effects. And Caro had seen for herself a Julian both healthy and coherent. The folder with Barbara's neuroradiology notes suggested tremendous possibilities. Julian's session had stimulated a largely unexplored part of the brain. Mapping that area could yield critical research into brain functioning, with huge implications for understanding memory, imagination, REM sleep, any number of cerebral phenomena. Watkins had told her the truth. This data could lead to a major brain mapping article authored by Caro and Barbara, with Watkins's name to lend it prominence. It was an exciting possibility, one that could revive her entire career. Another reason to stay. Along with Ellen, Kayla, Angelica, med school debt, credit card debt, and the loan from Weigert. All balanced against participation in a research project unsanctioned by the FDA, AMA, NIH, or any other alphabetic codon. Although, if not sanctioned, not forbidden either. Her back itched. She was probably single-handedly contributing to a bull market in lime juice. After another session of standing naked in the bathtub, dripping citrus juice over her shoulder, Caro dressed and turned to the folder for the first person she would implant, Julian's sister, Lorraine. Carefully, she went over Lorraine's pre-surgical medical history, psychological evaluation, and imaging. It all looked good, as did a plain folder Julian hadn't mentioned, with medical bios of Molly, Barbara, Ralph Egan, and the nursing staff. Finally, she opened George Weigert's thick folder about his theory. Rifling through the pages, she saw equations, diagrams, long paragraphs dense with the language of physics. Fortunately, Weigert had written a 9-page, brief introduction, neatly divided into sections labeled universe, perception and consciousness, entanglement, consensus reality, space, time, and, surprisingly, death. She read through the introduction, blinked, read it again, laid it down on her desk and stared at it, as if at a bomb that might explode if she touched it again. And she had been worried about mere hallucinations of designer universes. No professional language seemed suitable. Caro reverted to girlhood. "Oh my God," she said aloud. "You've got to be shitting me." But she knew they were completely serious.